but that's the old me.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great weekend. We've got a lot to talk about. As always, we're going to be talking about everything that's going on in pop culture with our pop culture panel. And joining me on the panel this week, two of my favorite people. First of all, Cheryl Sackman. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
And I said two of my favorite people, but we're letting Jared Cash be on the show, so maybe I'm not right about that. Nah, I love Jared. Jared, welcome to Let's Go Pensacola.
Hey, Julio. Thanks for having me.
Or should I, what name are we putting on your Pensacon, your Pensacon badge this year? Well, it was Jarred last year, right?
Well, based on recent developments, it can be Trivia Master.
Trivia Master. Oh, well, tell me about that. Why are you Trivia Master?
So I recently started hosting what is quickly being described to me as the most difficult trivia in town at the Five Barrel Brewery over there on Palafox. I think you've been over there before.
Oh, yeah. Our buddy Jason Mosley owns that. Yeah, good friends of Pensacon and good friends of Pensacola in general.
Yeah, but I started hosting trivia over there about a month ago, and it's really starting to pick up. But despite my best efforts at making it easier, somehow every week I keep making it more difficult. So
okay, so
we'll see what I can do about that next time.
So you gotta hit me. What's the level of difficulty here? If people are saying this is difficult, I want a sample question. I'll be the judge of difficulty.
All right, let me. I actually had it pulled up last night because I've been commiserating over it. So the theme every week is a little bit different. There's a overall theme, and last night it was by land, by sea, and by air. So each of the three rounds was related to land travel, air travel, or sea travel. But one of them was, why is it considered bad luck by sailors to set sail on the first Monday in April?
Okay, yeah, I've got no idea about that, but Cheryl's a Navy veteran. I bet you she's got an idea about that.
And I was just thinking to myself, I spent 20 years in the Navy, and I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
Okay, so you may be earning the title here, Jared.
What? So that is the day that Cain slew Abel.
Okay, yeah, no, see, I would have never guessed that, but I'm not a big religion guy either, so that...
And it's also bad luck to set sail on New Year's Eve, because that's the day that Judas Iscariot hung himself.
So you're saying this is lighthearted fun trivia at Five Barrel?
Absolutely. Murder, suicide, heavy biblical themes. Last night we had some Top Gun trivia, and I may have had a slide that flipped off the entire crowd.
Yeah, see, Top Gun, I wouldn't be an expert on that either. I've seen enough of Top Gun to know what Top Gun is. I know all the, you know, all the catchphrases, and you can be my wingman, and the oiled up volleyball players, and all that. But you know, that's, you know, take me to bed and lose me forever. You know, that's about it. I'm done with my Top Gun knowledge.
Okay, well, while you were thinking all that heavy stuff, I was sitting here wondering, how come Judas Iscariot committed suicide on New Year's Eve, yet we celebrate Easter in the spring, and he supposedly committed suicide after he betrayed? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, don't think too hard about the calendar with when it comes to religion. It doesn't quite always line up the way
you'd like it to be. Our holidays were meant to line up with pagan holidays.
Yeah, not a whole lot of snow in Bethlehem in the nativity.
My brain falls down a lot of rabbit holes.
No, understandable.
And it also takes a while for that kind of guilt to really fester. So,
yeah,
I mean, he had 30 pieces of silver to blow. It took him a few months.
Yeah, it was when the money was gone. That's when, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So let's get away from the potential blasphemy and just move on to pop culture. I will give you the title. That is some difficult trivia, Jared. So I'll give you that. Make sure you check that out at Five Barrel. But, you know, speaking of things that are kind of difficult to comprehend, we've got a new Christopher Nolan movie out, Tenet, this weekend. And he's known known for these intricate and very involved movies. He's very into the big screen experience, and he was very insistent that this was coming out on the big screen. So this has been the movie that all through the COVID closures has been the canary in the coal mine. It's the one that they pushed back multiple times. And so it's finally out in theaters, the 70% of theaters that are open nationwide, with about 25 to 40% capacity, depending on where you're at. I think we're at about 30% capacity here in our local theaters in Pensacola and Santa Rosa County. So is this a movie that you guys have been looking forward to? Does this move the needle for you? Are you excited? You go into the theater, or are you still staying away from theaters? Jared, I'll start with you on that.
So I'm personally still staying away from theaters. I have kind of moved away from the theater experience in the past couple years, except for a few, like, gotta see it, you know, Avengers, Star Wars, things like that. Actually, the last Star Wars I didn't go see in theaters, which was the first one that's been released in my lifetime that I didn't see in theaters. I've kind of moved more towards the home theater experience. I've got a big screen TV. I can pause it, take as many breaks as I want. The number of streaming services and everything that are out there, they made it hard for me to go to the theater anyway. And then now they keep going back and forth with what's open, what's closed, what's safe, what's not safe. I don't want to roll the dice. I feel like I've dodged the bullet long enough, but I'd rather not put myself in front of it at this point. Now, that being said, with Nolan films, I avoid as much as I can. Don't watch trailers. I don't read. Like, I'll see, like, a teaser trailer, and then I'll see the movie. I don't want to be contaminated. So I know very little about it, but it's Christopher Nolan, so I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, same thing.
I'm not going to go to the theater.
Yeah, same thing. I've been personally avoiding, you know, the details on this and trying to wait. I will probably see this in the theater. I'm not sure exactly when, but I've been doing the same thing. Cheryl, what about you? Are you a Nolan fan at all, first of all?
I'm not. I'll just say I'm neutral on him. I try to avoid reading too many reviews, and I've seen kind of mixed reviews on this one. But I know that my tastes aren't necessarily those of the critics. I think I will probably wait. This is not going to bring me into a theater, if that's ultimately what you're asking. I am looking forward to going to a theater again, but this film is not going to do that for me. I'll watch it on TV. I'll pull it up on Netflix or Amazon once it's available. But I'd say I'd have a mixed opinion about it. If it was a Marvel blockbuster, it would be a different thing. But it's not going to bring me into a theater.
So is it Marvel in particular that's going to be what you're waiting for, Cheryl, or is there some other movie?
No, just something along that line. Marvel or Star Wars. I don't usually go to a theater unless it's for a big blockbuster that I want to see on a big screen. Jurassic Park would take me to a theater. If it's something that it doesn't matter what size the screen is, I'm just going to watch it at home. But there are some films you just, for me, there are some films that I just have to see on a big screen.
So
I don't think this would be one of them.
So probably Wonder Woman 1984, which we're looking at first weekend in October for.
Yeah, I'll probably go to a theater for that.
Okay, Jared, how about you? What'll it take you to get you back into a theater?
So the biggest heartbreak for me this year was having to continue to wait for Top Gun 2. Top Gun has been my favorite movie since I was a child. I have owned it on multiple copies on VHS that I wore out. I owned it on Laserdisc. I've had a Betamax copy somewhere, even though I've never had a Betamax player. I've got like 6 different versions on DVD. So a sequel to Top Gun is something I've been waiting almost my whole life for. I'll be there. I'll wear a full hazmat suit if I have to. But I'm going to see that one on the big screen.
Okay, so we're looking at
I can't stand IMAX movies. And when they release Top Gun in IMAX, they give me really bad headaches. I went and saw it twice in IMAX.
Oh, wow.
And I fought through the headache.
Okay, so we're talking the holidays then, because that's been moved to the holidays. So you guys still feel like you might get into theaters this year, just not right now.
Right. Well, and for me, it's not even so much a concern about being exposed, because I've already had it. And so I'm pretty sure I have an antibody now. I know they don't last forever. So I'm still cautious, because there are people that are getting it a second time. But I'm probably not as concerned about that as other people are. For me, it's It's just whether I want to go see it on a big screen or not. And I would also like to see Top Gun on a big screen, too.
Okay, we do have to take a break. Folks, we'll be back with you in just a few minutes. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are talking about everything that's going on in pop culture with our pop culture panel for today. Cheryl Sackman and Jared Cash are on the line. And coming back with a little bit of music from Black Panther there. As you folks probably know by now, if you pay attention to the news at all, you know that we lost a great actor last week, just about a week ago. Chadwick Boseman, who of course played Black Panther in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also known for playing a number of real-life historical figures of great import, played, of course, Jackie Robinson in 42, played James Brown in Get On Up, played the Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. So, you know, somebody who is first of all, an amazing actor, but second of all, someone who has meant a lot to a lot of people, and especially to a lot of people in the Black community. The impact of Black Panther in particular just can't be over-exaggerated in terms of overall impact, in that it's the highest grossing single character superhero movie of all time, and one of the highest grossing movies of all time. He of course appeared in 4 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, one of which is now the all-time box office champion. But just a character that has meant so much to not just the African American community, but to especially to the kids in that community, to see somebody that looks like them, that is a king and a hero, and it has just uplifted so many people. But it's also a character that a lot of people outside the African American community have related to. You know, my daughter is a huge Black Panther fan. I know lots of, you know, people of all races that just really embrace this character and embrace this movie. And I wanted to spend the next little bit talking about what this character has meant to people. Cheryl, now I know that this is a character that meant a lot to you as well, so I'd like to start with you on this.
His role when he played Black Panther, that role was so, it had so many layers to it. He just wasn't a caricature like you see in a lot of films where especially black men will be portrayed a certain way and there's no depth to them. They're just playing, you know, the thug or something like that. But he had such dignity and so many layers, and he was so faceted, and he treated everyone with dignity and respect, even his enemies. And you could tell that, to me, that in the character, that even his enemies weren't really his enemies. They were sometimes victims themselves of their life situation. I think that when Chadwick Boseman played this role, he knew. I've read an article written by the director of Black Panther, and he said that even he didn't know how big this film was going to be, but that Chadwick Boseman knew it, and that he would tell the other actors, they're not ready for this, what we're doing here. Direct quote, this is Star Wars, this is Lord of the Rings, but for us and bigger. He knew all along how important, I get a little hitch in my throat. He knew how important this film was going to be, and the way he conducted himself and the way he conducted himself afterwards, and knowing the whole time that he'd already been diagnosed with cancer. I just think he was a remarkable person, and I think that he created a remarkable character. I mean, I know someone else created the character, but he is the one that brought it to life for so many of us. I just think he was truly an admirable person.
Well, and that's an amazing thing to consider when you consider how physical that role in particular is. But, you know, acting in general, it can be very physical, but especially right. A big action superhero movie like that. This man made 4 of these movies while suffering from colon cancer and ultimately dying of colon cancer, that in and of itself is just an incredible testament to his spirit and to his drive.
And he made it a point to go out and connect, especially with children who were also fighting cancer. And it was an emotional thing for him. I saw a couple of interviews that he did where people asked him about it. And he stayed in touch with some of those people's families. And never let on that he was going through the same kind of battle. It brings me to tears every time I think about it. He was just such an admirable, always so dignified. I'm sure he had times when he cut up and let loose, but he just, even then, he, from what I've seen, obviously I'm not a deep, close personal friend, but he just seemed so dignified. And I just think he's a person that anyone would be, should be able to emulate. He's truly a remarkable person.
Well, I agree. And Jared, let's hear a little bit from you. What are your thoughts about Chadwick Boseman's career and about his passing?
So his passing caught me completely off guard. I don't dig deep into the personal going ons of celebrities, even if it's, you know, stuff that's readily known. I still like to give them their privacy, I guess, as best I can. I try not to read, you know, about this celebrity who's been diagnosed with this. And it's like, well, that's their thing. Like, that's not for me to get in. But when I saw it, it hit hard because in today's day and age, a lot of people don't separate actors from the characters that they play. They believe that the character is the actor. And for the most part, they're very wrong on that. But I really feel that Boseman truly did embody the Black Panther spirit. Everything I've ever read about him is just about his charitable work and his philanthropy and his strength of character and his inner strength. I mean, you brought it up. He filmed 4 Marvel movies while being treated for colon cancer. That illness, very rarely do people bounce back from. But he was able to stick around and make history, really. Not a lot of people get that opportunity, and I can't help but feel that that's part of what kept him going, was just the strength of character that he had and the desire to bring back Black Panther out in such a way that you can't help but respect the character and you can't help but respect the actor that played him. If you had had, you could have another great actor play the character and play the character well, but then if they have some big scandal that blows up, it hurts the character. You're not going to have that with this. And it's terrible that we lost him so young, but it's beautiful that we're going to have this moment in glass of a wonderful man playing a wonderful character. And that's the end of the story.
Well, and unfortunately, that's probably not the end of the story in terms of this character, because there's the situation being, first of all, the character being a part of an interlocking universe. And second of all, there being so much money involved in this. I don't see them not going forward with another Black Panther movie, which brings to the...
No, someone else will be brought on and he will be replaced in some way. But
well, and
Boseman,
that's... And then that's the question.
The character to the screen.
Yeah, that, and then that's the question,
no,
of course, is
that.
What do they do now? You know, that's, and it feels in some ways a little bit too soon to be having that conversation. But on the other hand, it's certainly a conversation that's being had at Marvel, at Disney. And it's a conversation that's being had on the internet for sure. I mean, what do you want to see going forward? And I've seen kind of people talking about 2 different options, one being recasting T'Challa, which a lot of people are very opposed to. Another option being to let the character die and have a new character take on the mantle of Black Panther, which is a possibility and is certainly something that has happened before in the comics, although in comics, unfortunately, unlike real life, people don't come back. In the comics, people come back all the time. That does not happen in real life. In fact, T'Challa on screen has come back from death a couple of times already. So there's the discussion of, do you recast? Do you elevate another character? And if so, what character. And there are a lot of people that would like to see Letitia Wright's character, Shuri, take on the mantle of Black Panther, which is something that has happened in the comics. And we move forward with a female Black Panther and his younger sister, which would make sense also in terms of it being a, you know, a family line that that right. rules the country of Wakanda. So there's some sense to that. But I, you know, do you think that people are ready to accept a female Black Panther? Do you think that Letitia Wright is at the point that she can carry a movie herself? Cheryl, I'll start with you on that.
I think that that film had so much power, and I think that that character, Shuri, had so much love that she probably could. Would I think it'd be as big a film as the original Black Panther? I don't think it would be. I've also seen articles where people are proposing to bring Michael Jordan back, but have him play T'Challa. And I think you could even consider M'Baku, who was a rival, but a frenemy, could see him slip into that role. I don't know how well that would work, but I think Shuri could carry off a film. I think a lot would depend on her supporting cast.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I would imagine that everybody is under contract that was under contract for the first movie, mm-hmm. Other than perhaps Michael Jordan, because he was meant to be only in the one film. That's something I've discussed online a couple of times as well. I think that's an interesting idea, because Michael Jordan is such a great actor that there's a lot of potential there, and it would be interesting to see what he could do from the other side. But I want to bring Jared in on this as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, my first thought is, this is Disney and Marvel. As soon as he was diagnosed, they had a plan. We don't know what it is.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not, because it sounds like they didn't know. I don't think
I really
a lot of the people
like
involved in the movie did not.
Somewhere has made a contingency.
It maybe in the broad sense, but I certainly don't think they expected it anytime soon.
Yeah, Ryan Coogler said that he had been writing the script for Chad Boseman to play that role, and then how real it was for him to be writing the words that he was going to say, and now he's gone.
No, and it's likely that they were working under that assumption, because obviously you don't want to say, okay, well, this person is no longer going to be with us. We're going in this direction. But I can't help but feel that someone somewhere has been working on this contingency. But as far as recasting or something like that, I like the Shuri character too much the way she is right now. And I think elevating her to the mantle of Black Panther, we would lose a lot of what makes her character so interesting. I like her in that Q gadget type role, because you don't see a lot of women in, you know, the tech role. She is the scientific genius of Wakanda. That's a beautiful place to have her. So turning her into the foot soldier is kind of, it's reductive for her. I like her character where she is, being the technological heart of this society. Now, bringing up M'Baku, I would love to see them work out a way that Winston Duke would be able to take up the mantle. He is a phenomenal actor, and I don't know how much you've seen him in, but his range is just phenomenal, and I would love to see him be able to take up the reins. I think he would honestly be able to carry it.
Okay, and with that, we are running out of time for this segment. We will be back after the break, but we do have to say goodbye to Cheryl. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It is my pleasure.
Jared and I will be back with more after the break. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Just a man can simplify. You can't afford.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Got to let that one play for a little bit. Got to hear a little bit of the Damned. It's hard for me to cut that off mid-song. Sometimes I get so excited about the bumper music, I don't even want to talk. I just want to play the songs at you guys. So, but it's talk radio station, so we got to talk. And we're talking with Jared Cash right now about a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything that's going on in pop culture. And we're moving on. I played that because that was a song that was used prominently in the first season of The Boys on Amazon Prime, which is returning for its second season this weekend. I haven't had a chance to start watching the new episodes yet, although I'm very much looking forward to it because the first season was a big favorite of mine. Jared, were you a fan of The Boys?
I really enjoyed it. I had not really known about The Boys until I saw Amazon was releasing this series called The Boys. And then so I did a deep dive and started, you know, reading as much as I could find about it. And all I could think was, how is Amazon making this?
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal, if you've read the original comics, it's pretty brutal. Originally done by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, who's a, you know, just great writer-artist team. And it's a brilliant concept in that these are the guys that keep the superheroes in check. And the superheroes are not all as shiny, squeaky clean as you might remember from watching the Super Friends in the 70s. You know, they're grown up adult in every sense of the word, and sometimes
well,
not
that's
very
what
nice
me
people
off guard the most. That's what caught me off guard the most about Amazon picking it up. They don't shy away from, you know, deep, dark adult scenes, but this goes several steps beyond hyper violence. Sexual assault is a very prevalent theme within the show and within the graphic novel. And including that type of information in our current age, it's a balancing act.
Well, especially in a show and in a comic that is very, it definitely has a sense of humor, and it is a very dark sense of humor, but there is a comedy aspect to all of this, in with the action and the thrills and the drama, that it can be very funny. And that's not something you would expect to say following what you just said about the show. So it definitely pushes the envelope in a lot of respects.
It was a real knife edge that they had to walk while tackling these super dark themes that people don't like to speak about. But at the same time, they were able to put these comedic edges on everything. And from one minute, you're seeing something truly terrible, and then less than a minute later, you're laughing uncontrollably at something completely unrelated. And there were times I felt bad because I didn't have enough time to mourn what had happened before I'm forced to laugh, which to me is beautiful that they were able to do that, seriously approach these serious and sensitive subjects, and still make a lot of inappropriate jokes that I couldn't help but laugh at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we say that it goes from everything from sometimes the musical cues are things that you wouldn't expect. They do a very good job of that, much in the same way that the Umbrella Academy, I think, has done a very good job of that, and that sometimes the music cues are so incongruous from what you might expect that's going on. I, in particular, I'm thinking of the use of the Spice Girls wannabe in The Boys. Very memorably used. I just love stuff that does that and that walks an edge and that it's smart, but it also is complex without being overly cerebral, if that makes sense.
Well, I think the music for me was one of the things that kept me hooked in the Umbrella Umbrella Academy. I thought it was a wonderful, beautiful show. But the soundtrack and the score just kept me on my toes. Every time I turned around, I'm hearing something else. I'm like, I would have never thought in a million years that that would be the appropriate song for this moment. I now cannot think of any song that would fit. Like, that is the only appropriate song for this type of sequence. And it was just beautiful that they were able to do that for two seasons. So I'd love to see what they're going to do in the third.
Yeah, and, you know, looks like we're going to get a third. I'm very excited to see more of that. We say the word more. I think more is kind of the defining word of television right now. There's so much out there to watch. And I say television broadly, that would include, you know, everything that's available on the 19 million streaming services. And, you know, we still have networks and cable TV and podcasts and YouTube. And, you know, there's so much to follow out there that it gets to the point of how do you follow it all? How do you keep abreast of everything that's happening in pop culture? And I pose the question to you, Jared, how do you keep abreast of it?
Well, I mean, you hear the joke all the time, you know, or see it in a meme or whatever, that, oh, what are you going to do tonight? Well, I'm going to spend 2 hours looking at the Netflix queue and then go back and watch The Office for the 10th time. And unfortunately, having so much to choose from makes choosing extremely difficult. I've run into this myself because not only are we getting new stuff, we're getting stuff that we may not have watched before. There's access to tons. Pretty much every show at this point is available on some streaming service. And I mean every show ever that has ever been released on television, you can find it somewhere to watch. There's one service, I can't remember what it's called, has all 16,000 plus episodes of General Hospital. It is impossible to get caught up on this show, but they're out there if you want to watch them all.
Yeah, there is somebody at home right now pushing their glasses up on their nose and saying, well, actually, you know, we say that, and there is more out there than anybody could ever watch. But I guarantee you there's also somebody that's right now grousing, well, I can't watch this show that I've been wanting to watch for 20 years because it's not on anywhere. And yeah, of course, when we say that, we're speaking hyperbolically. There are exceptions. Yes, not every single thing has ever been licensed. There are things that can't be licensed because of music issues. There are things that aren't put on services because of content concerns, because the attitudes have changed and the social attitudes have changed over the years. You know, no, Disney's not putting Song of the South on Disney Plus. That's not going to happen. And that's okay, you know, because you've got 9 million other things to watch.
Every year, that changes. I mean, if you'd have told me at some point in life I could go back and watch Knight Rider or Quantum Leap or the original A-Team with just hitting buttons on my remote, that would have been unfathomable. Even when I was 20. Like, no, I'm going to have to buy it on DVD. No, it's literally you just push buttons on your remote and you'll find it eventually. And yes, it was a bit hyperbolic to say everything that's ever been out there. But at the same time, if you look hard enough, you can probably find it.
Well, and you know, there are certainly services out there where you can have all of your streaming services kind of, in a sense, combined into one where there's some kind of guide that will, you know, you search for something, it'll search all the streaming services and find it for you. Some of them even have voice searches. So you could literally, you know, we live in the era of Star Trek. You can say, computer, find me the Wonder Years, and the computer's going to find you the Wonder Years and start playing it at you.
Which, as you mentioned, music licensing issues, has some licensing issues.
Yeah, I think that's why was the first thing that popped into my head when I started that sentence, because that is a series that there's been a lot of issues.
It definitely caught me off guard when we went back to watch The Wonder Years, and I'm hearing the theme, and I'm like, that's not the theme.
Well,
it's close.
You know, it's interesting because that has been an issue, and there are the last we saw the big issue used to be for home video. So they didn't license the song for home video, so they had to change the song or they couldn't release the thing. And it seems like the last series where that was an issue was the Drew Carey Show. And that's why that show's not widely available, is because that was like the last show that came out before they started realizing, oh, yeah, we've got to license the rights for formats that we don't know exist yet. And so that for me is one of the white whales, because I was a big fan of that show. That show was a lot of fun, and I don't think gets enough credit and doesn't really have the audience. The audience that has kind of stuck around for it and grown the way things like The Office or Friends or How I Met Your Mother have, because they've been able to air continually and they've been picked up on these streaming services and just continually find a new audience year after year after year. We got to take a break, but we'll come back and talk about a little bit more about this. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hey. 3-4!
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Couldn't resist a little bit of the Presidents of the United States of America version of Cleveland Rock, since we were talking about the Drew Carey Show right before the break. And I've got Jared Cash on the line with me. We've been talking about kind of a little bit of everything that's going on in pop culture. And Jared, I didn't know if you had any more thoughts you wanted to add to that discussion about music rights being an issue sometimes with streaming programming or home video, et cetera, et cetera.
Nothing specific. I think it's something that we're going to resolve in time. It's just whenever these music use and rights contracts were written, for a lot of these issues that are coming up, streaming wasn't a thing. It wasn't fathomable. No one could even picture, you know, that you would carry a phone around in your pocket and be able to watch this show that was on the air 40 years ago. So it's something that is going to get fixed somehow. I don't know how. Not a music executive, not an attorney, but I do know somewhere some sort of solution is going to be come up with, and it'll clear a lot of these barriers that are out there right now.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's kind of a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, as a fan, I want to see everything that I want to see, and I want to see it the way it was originally made. I want to be able to enjoy the original intent and enjoy the original music and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, knowing how the music industry works and knowing how little sometimes songwriters and musicians can make off of their music, especially in the days where all music is streaming now too and nobody is buying physical media anymore, sometimes those songwriting residuals are the only ways these people are earning a living. And you know, especially if they're an older artist, they can't tour anymore, things like that. Of course, you know, this year nobody's been able to tour with COVID, so everybody's kind of scraping by on their royalties, and they're not getting a lot of sales anymore. So it's, you know, I want to see that those people are taken care of and that they're compensated for their talent. But it's hard, you know, and I respect somebody that stands firm and says, no, you're not going to use my song in that format until you pay me for it. You know, I have a little less concern about the Rolling Stones or the Beatles than I do about, you know, somebody that had a one-hit wonder in the late 70s and, you know, maybe, you know, now approaching retirement age and counting on those royalties for their, you know, for their daily getting by. You know, if you're a mega superstar, yeah, you should still have control over how your music's used, but you can afford to settle for a little less than the guy that's it. You know, if you're M, the guy that recorded pop music, That's all you got. You don't have a catalog of 300 songs that are all going to be perpetual money makers.
Well, yeah, and there's several ways to look at that. If someone wrote a song specifically for a show, then it is part of that show.
Sure.
To me, once again, not a musician, not a lawyer, but to me, it feels very similar to, let's say I built a house and I sold you the house, and then 10 years later you decide you're going to sell the house to someone else, and I come to you and say, well, you need to give me some of that money.
Yeah,
I made that house. I know you own it and you're selling it, but I made it. So it's, I know it's tangible goods versus artistic output, but at the end of the day, the music is a commodity, and music is licensed versus sold. But I still feel, there comes a certain point where, as an artist, you do sell a part of yourself. And that's one of the hard things about being an artist, is you are selling yourself. But at a certain point, you have to recognize that once you have sold it, it is no longer yours.
Well, and it becomes a broader issue, too, in that, there are artists that want to be careful about how their art is used. And, whether we're talking, and I'm kind of expanding, I don't usually like to get into anything political on this show, but, what's your feeling on that versus an artist telling a politician they would prefer that they not use their music, or barring them from using their music?
Well, that's their right. It is their product. It is their art. They have the right to say, I will not sell this to you. I will not license it to you. And I firmly believe in their right to do that. What I'm saying is, once you have given that license, like to a television series, I don't really feel you can go back later and say, I said you could use it for TV, but this is on a streaming service. It's like, well, no, you said we could use it for the show, and the show is still being put out. So it's very murky, and it's way more complicated issue than we can discuss in, an hour or the 10 minutes of this segment. And I'm sure a lot of artists are going to hate me right now, but I really do feel that, you are selling a part of yourself, and that's extremely painful. And I understand that, but it is a commodity. And once you've given up a commodity, it's not yours anymore.
Well, and it is something that different artists look at different ways, both in broadly, not just in terms of licensing music for television or movies or commercials, but also above and beyond into politicians using them, people using them as bumper music on their radio shows, whatever. Great example being Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders, who has pretty much said, once my music is out there, it's out there for everybody, and hasn't really objected. A lot of people expressed, why did you let Rush Limbaugh use Back to Ohio on for his he's used that for his bumper music, his theme music, for a couple of decades now. And she said, well, the song's out there. It's, anybody can use it that wants to use it. I mean, not royalty free. She still makes money off of it, but she's not concerned about the political part of that, whereas some other artists might be. I know there's been a lot of artists in the news recently that have been upset about their music being used by one politician or the other at campaign rallies. They found out that their music is being used, and then have come out and said, I don't want anything to do with that candidate, and I have asked them not to use my music. We have ordered them not to use it. We've sent cease and desists, etc. At some point, I guess they can sue over it. I don't know exactly how that works.
I wholeheartedly support their right to do that, because, once again, it is a piece of themselves, and it's kind of like your neighbor saying, oh, you're mowing your grass. Well, let me put a blindfold on you, and then picking you up and putting you in their in their yard. So now you're mowing their grass. It's like, well, no, I said I was going to do mine.
Can that work? Because I'd be happy to do that.
I'm not a very big guy, and my neighbor's tried it a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, I could use my grass cut. Come on over.
Well, but I mean, basically, my point was, no, if it's your art, you own it. then yes, you have the right to say who can and cannot use it. And if someone is using it inappropriately or illegally, then yeah, there should be repercussions either side of the aisle. I don't care. It's just that's theft. That is stealing a part of someone at that point.
But your point brought more broadly about something that's already been produced that they've licensed a song for is that once you feel like it's double dipping to go back and say, oh, well, no, you didn't purchase rights to do, you know, to print it on a disc and then sell it. You didn't purchase rights to stream it across the internet. Because
once again, not a lawyer, not a music executive, but I do feel that, you know, if you tell someone they can borrow your paintbrush to paint your front door, and then you decide to paint your windowsill too, they can't really get mad about that because you're still just painting. Like, I don't know. It's super complicated.
It's not a standard that's held up in court, but I get where you're coming from for sure. Is there a certain project that or a certain show that you remember that you were either disappointed by when they re-released it without the original music, or that you've been waiting to see come out and be available that you are held up for music rights that you're aware of?
Well, I mean, we kind of touched on it earlier. But whenever Wonder Years came out on Netflix, my wife and I started watching it. And, you know, that beautiful opening chord that I remember from my childhood very dearly then devolved into someone's voice I did not recognize and completely caught us off guard. And we were immediately, you know, Googling and getting on Wikipedia, like, what's going on here? This isn't right. And, you know, ultimately found out what it was and, you know, we were both really hurt because that song was a part of our childhood. And I'm okay with covers and remakes and all that, and that's fine. But it was that one version that, you know, we needed at that point.
Well, and in particular, for Wonder Years, you're talking about originally they used Joe Cocker's cover of the Beatles with a little help from my friends. So I haven't watched it on streaming.
Now we have a cover of a cover.
So we have somebody else covering the Beatles song. So it's not in this case, it's the actual rights to the recording and not the rights to the song itself. They've still licensed the song, right?
It probably gets even more complicated than that because who owns the Beatles catalog right now? Because that keeps changing every 10 years, it seems.
I think it's Sony, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So that may be, it may be a Sony series, so they were able to use the composition, but they weren't able to use that recording because Joe Cocker said, hey, you need to give me a little bit more money. We got to earn a little bit more.
Or it could have been Joe Cocker said, we're good with it, but Sony was like, nah, we don't like that version anymore.
Yeah, anything's possible, but we do have to get a little bit more money for the station now, so unfortunately the show is over. But Jared, one more time, tell people about how they can come enjoy some trivia with you.
So I am Panhandle Porridge Productions. I've started doing trivia and event hosting. Right now our main event is Thursday nights at the Five Barrel Brewery on Palafox, right across the street from the Sanger. Starts at 7 p.m. There's prizes every round of the night. And then there's a big grand prize that we kind of keep secret, but everyone seems to love.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely have to check that out. Folks, we are out of time for this week, but we will see you back here next week. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.